Hello, everyone, and welcome to Heard on the Street, Street Fights podcast, where we uncover the stories behind the companies and, more importantly, the people that constitute this sector of media and advertising that we all call local. So where are they from? What makes them tick? What business and life lessons can we draw from that? So I'm Mike Boland, lead analyst at Street Fight, and our guest today is Jeff Hassan, strategist at Possible Mobile and author of three books, the most recent of which is The Art of Digital Persuasion. So we talked to Jeff from our studio in San Francisco for part one of a two-part series. So here's our discussion with Jeff. So Jeff, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Mike. It's great to reconnect with you. It's been a couple of years, but I've been following your writing and your podcast, and it's a pleasure to be on.
Yeah, likewise. Great to reconnect, and this will be fun. So we have a lot to talk about, including diving deeper on all those kind of things I just mentioned and kind of your rap sheet. But first, let's start with the present. So tell us a bit about yourself and your current role for those unfamiliar.
Yeah. Again, thanks for the opportunity. So my my professional life is now twofold. I full time. I'm a strategist at a digital agency called Possible, and I work for Possible Mobile, and we are a pure mobile app play. So we build, develop, and support some of the largest apps: March Madness, the NBA, JetBlue, CNN. It's mostly a development shop. And I was brought in as a strategist to help on things like re-engagement, what happens after the download, and also to broaden our relationships with our clients. They historically have been with the developers and with IT. And now, as I'm sure you know, CMOs are in the room, and it's all about how do we create a great experience for the user. So the audience has broadened, and our offerings have broadened to bring more strategy to the table.
Yeah, and like the CMO's tech budget is now exceeding the IT budget in most organizations, as we kind of hear about a lot. And I'm also interested in diving into some of the stuff about apps, because the challenge there, of course, is that the kind of retention and active usage around apps is such a challenge. So I'm sure you're tackling that at Possible. But what we're going to do first is hit the rewind button, go back to kind of the beginning of your career, and then walk back to the present, as we often do on this show. So tell us about like your origin story, your superhero origin story, and kind of what got you into the world of digital media and marketing.
Yeah. So I'm not as young as you, and I know that we only have a certain amount of time. So I'm going to, I'll give you highlights, but here's as short as I can tell it. So I started out as a sports writer right out of college.
Nice.
And my dad said, enjoy it, because one day you'll have to work for a living. I mean, he literally said that, and no truer words have ever been spoken. I used to go to the Olympics and the World Series and the Super Bowl and the Final Four, and I was on the 50-yard line and underneath the basket when the Lakers were winning titles, and it was awesome. But I was in an industry that, even in the early days, was morphing, and I was a print journalist, and I mean, today they're dinosaurs, and I have friends who are unbelievably talented, you know, 100 times more talented than me, who are, you know, having struggle, you know, doing that profession long term. And what I found out was what my transferable skill was writing, that I actually thought that everybody could write. And I was, I met some people who were in a PR firm in LA when I was living there, and they asked me to come in and write a press kit for a client, backgrounder, a couple of press releases, a bio on some of the executives. And I asked them why can't you do that? You know, what's the issue here? And they said, well, the client's going to fire us tomorrow if we don't have a press kit on our desk. So I should have ran, but instead I went in and I wrote some stuff over the course of a few hours. And Mike, I told you this was going to be a short story, so I'll accelerate. But the reason why I'm telling you this is that writing, communication has been the glue in my entire career. So I went from reporter to from journalist to PR agency to ad agency. I went working, I was in Salt Lake living in Park City working on the Olympics and the look and feel of the games, and it was fantastic. I went to Japan and I went to Atlanta. And I ended up moving to Seattle for a promotion within my agency, and I got into mobile when I went to a company called InfoSpace. This was just when the iPhone was about to be introduced, and I went to a company that, to do online search, but the other side of their business was ringtones, graphics, and games. And we used to turn American Idol performances into ringtones overnight. Well, I came in to do online search, but the company made a huge bet on mobile. So I was switched over to that side. And that model actually blew up because the record labels and the carriers decided that they were going to go direct and didn't need a middleman. But it was fortuitous for me that I got into mobile because the iPhone comes out and I became a CMO of a company called Hip Cricket, which was a startup that was trying to use this potential new channel to, as everybody said, drive sales, engagement, and loyalty through the mobile device.
I remember it well. A lot of SMS-based marketing.
Yep. So started in that area. We ultimately broadened, but was working with brands to kind of figure this out. I've actually wrote three books. So the first book was during my Hip Cricket days, and it was a very early look at, so what does this all mean? And I've been married for so long that my my three books cover the span of my marriage. And my wife is a VP of marketing, so she's always been my target audience.
Nice.
You know, she has issues/problems, not in professional life. I mean, she's got it all nailed. But I mean, in personal life, but in professional, she's you know, churn and retention, and how do you get more customers, and how do you build a brand, and all those kinds of things. So I wrote this first book in 2010. I wrote my second book in 2015 because people had spent so much time on their mobile devices that the relationship, as you know, Mike, had become intimate. And the question was, how do you as a brand find a spot? Or is there a place, or is three a crowd? And I interviewed some of the world's great marketers, Coca-Cola, ESPN, Expedia, several others, and gave some real life actionable ways for people to ask and answer those kinds of questions. And then I'm sure you'll get to ask about the current book that just came out in the last month or so. But I'm now working at Possible Mobile. I see apps as being an important part, certainly not the exclusive part. And you probably remember, Mike, and you fit the same profile that I do. We don't hype. We talk about business objectives and how a solution may or may not be right for you. So to me, it's always been the what has remained the same. We need to drive sales. We need to build loyalty. It's just the how that's different. And now we have more potential hows. Apps remain hows, but we have things like virtual reality, voice, artificial intelligence, machine learning. Therein lies why we've gotten to present day when I decided I needed to write yet another book.
Yeah. The writing background now all kind of comes together and makes sense to me in terms of writing books to kind of scratch that itch. It also resonates with me because I didn't know any of this before, but we share that in common. I was a journalist before I transferred over to being an analyst. I was a reporter at Forbes magazine, similarly in the kind of print world. And, you know, for me, it has served me throughout my career in terms of being able to communicate well, especially as an analyst, where you have to, you know, a lot big part of the job is getting the stuff out of your brain and into like cohesive narratives.
Right.
But I think also it's skill set that was very transferable because I saw the writing on the wall around 2002 in terms of where print journalism was going. And I'm glad I saw that in advance and shifted that all over to being an analyst. And I was lucky enough that skill set transfers well. But I fully agree with you in terms of the kind of the value and the scarcity of that skill set. So that leads to the next question, which is we often ask our guests the overall skill sets that they have. I like to think of it as cross training, like an athlete cross trains.
Sure.
And, you know, you have writing, you have executive experience, you have a lot of perspective in the world of marketing and agency type kind of tactics.
Right.
So in full, what does that mosaic look like for you? And that's really to the lead into the real question is, what's your advice for folks at the beginning of their career? Not necessarily in like, you know, learn how to write or do this on a tactical level, but
sure.
overall in terms of gaining, you know, a breadth of skills or the things that they should be doing and thinking to develop their own skill set in a very varied way.
Right, right. Now, if we were doing this with visuals, I would show you a slide that I had for my second book, and it was about the personal journey that we as marketers need to take. And it was, if I hit the button at the right time, ride the winds of change and adapt. And there was somebody who would ride across the screen in these winds with a happy smile on their face. I mean, I think the overall answer, the umbrella answer to the question is, it's about morphing. It's about broadening. I mean, what I had my own business before I joined Possible Mobile, and since I joined, my horizons have been expanded very tangibly. I work next to data scientists. I work next to people whose lives are spent in analytics, and it's just made us become better marketers. So I think the in the interviews that I did for this last book, Tamara McCreary, who's a global marketer, I mean, she's just extremely smart. I mean, she talked about the uncertainty and the quicksand that many of us are living in. Mm. I think the most successful people, and I don't put myself in that category, but I think the most successful people are open to change and understand that it's more about collaboration now than it ever was before. So I don't think business, not to sound like an old man here, I don't think business was never about individuals, carrying a team. I think it was always about collaboration. But I think today, one can't possibly do it all alone. Just as you bring more technology and more demands and more, you look at the numbers, the longevity of a CMO, not very long. There's a lot more pressures. So I think the commonality in everything that I've done in my career is that, sure, there's always a bit of you that has this uncertainty and has this trepidation about doing something differently. Heck, I knew nothing about agencies, and I knew nothing about technology. In fact, I got into technology when an agency that I was working with bought a company that had tech clients. And I remember, I'm not going to name the company, but I remember meeting this very high-powered executive at a very well-known tech company, and she asked me what my tech experience was. And I had none, and I tried to bluff it. And I said, well, I worked on Nestle. And she said, no, what was your tech experience? And I said, no, I worked on the Olympics. And now I've done nothing but tech since 2002. And a lot of that, probably a bit of the answer to your question, it ties into my personal interests. I wouldn't call myself a gearhead. But another lesson learned in these recent interviews that I did was you need to feel it and touch it. And as much as you and I and many others get thought leadership out there and we create podcasts and we write books, honestly, that only goes so far. Someone like my wife needs to have these gadgets in the house. She needs to use them herself, see what the limitations are, see what the opportunities are, and then has a much better chance of answering the questions that she needs to have answered rather than to have somebody dictate it, because it really has to do, brand by brand and situation by situation.
Yeah. And what I hear there is adaptability, intellectual curiosity, and getting your hands dirty with the technology, which certainly resonates with me. In my business, I actually decided to build my own website instead of getting a developer to do it, just so I could learn it. And now my perspective on, WordPress and back-end programming and web development is that much greater. It makes me that much better of an analyst. So I certainly see all the things you're talking about, and that resonates with me. So we're actually going to pause there for a quick commercial break. When we come back, more from Jeff Hyson.
Hi everyone, this is Mike Bullen, lead analyst with Street Fight, and I'd like to talk to you today about Street Fight in 2019. So we've got lots of good things cooking and lots of opportunities for you to get involved. So we're looking for guests on this podcast. We're looking for editorial contributions from thought leaders. We're looking for inspiring speakers at our events. And all of that really comes together in the rich mosaic that you've come to know as Street Fight's thought leadership in location-based media and advertising and commerce and innovation. And part of that formula are lots of opportunities to sponsor content and have your brand associated with that thought leadership. So stay tuned for lots more information and announcements for those rollouts, and reach out to us if you have any questions or want your voice heard in that chorus of narratives, including this podcast and messages like this one. So you can email me at michael@streetfightmag.com for more, and we're looking forward to working with you in 2019.
So we're back. My guest is Jeff Hassan. So Jeff, before the break, we were talking about your personal background, your career background, and some of the lessons therein. Now let's kind of talk about the present. So you mentioned possible mobile. I want to dig a little bit deeper into the agency itself. What are some of its differentiators, its thesis, the types of clients it has? And then also you mentioned, you know, specializing in apps. What are some of the specific challenges that are endemic to apps? I mentioned retention, repeat use is kind of a common one that's stated. But what are some of the challenges you're helping your clients solve?
Sure. Sure. So I live in the agency world, and more specifically in the holding agency world. So there's a lot of change and consolidation going around. I work for a company that's owned by WPP, one of the largest holding companies in the world, and I'm part of a network of digital marketers. That's what we do. We don't do television commercials. We drive digital interactions and work with brands of all sizes to on whatever screen is appropriate to engage with folks. Possible Mobile was actually created and purchased. The company started as often the case as something else. And the CEO of Possible Mobile created one of the first apps, literally, I think one of the first 100 apps in the App Store. Now we've got, I think it's over 3 million apps and growing just in an individual App Store. Hmm. And as we know, the app world has changed. I mean, it used to be the, create an app and people are going to talk about it and people are going to want it. I think the biggest question that I – the answer that I give to the question of, you know, why have an app? Again, as we talked about a few minutes ago, not every solution, so-called solution, is right for everybody. I look at apps as being something that is complementary to the mobile web. So I look at the mobile web, and I'm not exclusive in this line of thinking. I look at the mobile web as being a mass door or mass storefront, for lack of a better term, for a business. You might have people going to a website to look at everything from a stock price to bios of the executives to, you know, products and services and careers and all of the kinds of things that one might look for a website. I think where apps come to play, and we see this, those who are succeeding in apps are providing experiences that become more for loyalists and yeah. have more personalization elements to them. REI is a really good example. So REI is very successful online, but it creates an app environment to tailor an experience to a user. And as we know, this is one of the big ahas for a lot of marketers are that expectations of their customers are a lot higher than one might think. And I think those that are failing, if I was a doctor and I was taking out my prescriptive tools, the first thing I would ask was, do you truly understand your customer? And this goes back to some of the marketing fundamentals that haven't changed in the mobile age and haven't changed in the emerging tool age. But I think it's about understanding what your customers are doing, you know, in the retail environment. REI very tangibly had to look at its customer service model. You've probably gone into REI and seen a green vest. They're called, these are people who literally are wearing green vests, and they're there and they know more about hiking boots and scaling walls than anybody should. But what happens in the days when people don't want to talk to people, they want to get on their phone and they want to look at product reviews. They want to look at pictures. They want a showroom and see if they can get something somewhere cheaper. So the personalization is so much more important, and that's best delivered in many cases on the app, in an app. But to your point, getting somebody to download an app versus getting somebody to use an app, you know, entirely different, I wouldn't say problems, I'll call them opportunities. But, you know, as we've been known to say, it's not about how many downloads, it's how many times that you're touching your customers in meaningful ways and giving them, cliche alert here, value, mm-hmm. Right? And it, there are a variety of ways to re-engage with your customers, push notifications, in-app messaging. You know, there are some rules that that are violated. For instance, you ask somebody to download an app, and the first thing that they see is asking to be sent push notifications, or would, are you okay if we look at your location? And that's on its face. Really dumb.
Yeah. You haven't gained the trust yet to ask that question.
Exactly. What you want to do is you want to provide some value when somebody says, hey, there's something in this for me. And then if I were to be asked to give my location, then I would go, hey, you know what? I think this experience is good for me. And if I give location, it's going to be that much better.
Yeah.
But many, many, many apps, many brands don't follow best practices and don't, actually use common sense, and you'll get a download and no activity, and people like Urban Airship, or now called Airship, yep. You know, they have great data around the need to touch people, the right amount of cadence to make sure that you are top of mind and you're there for the long term, as opposed to thinking that a download is a win in and of itself.
Yeah, and the kind of timing of when and how you ask for push notifications is so interesting. I've examined this a lot in the past, and another tactic I've seen is not just gaining that trust first, but when you ask within your own kind of module, and if someone says yes, then send them to ask the same question at the iOS level. If they say no, then you still have the chance to win them over, because if you send them to the iOS level, once they say no, to turn that notification back on is about seven different steps through the kind of settings labyrinth.
Right. So
it's interesting. I think it's also the loyalist play when it comes to app strategies is very logical, because conversely, if you're going for a reach play, it's a losing battle because, you know, with the maturity of that market of smartphones, we've gotten to the point where most users use, you know, you probably know the better number better than me, but it's a handful of apps in
right.
terms of active usage, and that's taken up by, you know, Facebook and maybe Google Maps and maybe Uber and maybe, you know, your messaging client, your mail client, and there's really not a lot of room left over in terms of like active usage. So going for a loyalist play just seems logical and in tune with the kind of consumer behavior that's matured.
Hi everyone, it's Mike Boland, lead analyst at Street Fight. So we hope you enjoyed this episode. This is actually just part one. We had a robust discussion with Jeff Hassan, so decided to break it into two full episodes. So stay tuned for part two, where we'll go deeper with Jeff about his new book. What are the takeaways? What did he learn most from that thought exercise? So this has been Heard on the Street. I'm Mike Boland. Thanks for listening.